This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Taipei 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Pro Studios. We all do look as cerulean. I warm your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working, Jeremy? Can you feel it?
Oh, yeah.
And the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. So, welcome to Freedom Fiends. I'm Lou, and I'm joined by Jeremy. And we're going to talk about stuff tonight.
Woohoo! Yeah. Stuff. I love talking about stuff.
We're going to put words together and all kinds of neat stuff.
Excellent.
So, today was an anniversary for me. I was telling you about this before the show started. 29 years ago today, well, yesterday now, I left for boot camp.
Boo.
So, no old fart jokes, please. No. And it's really interesting when I look at my journey over that time and the way that I felt about things back then and how I feel about them now and the changes that I've experienced as far as my philosophy, my personal philosophy, and how I deal with things. And it's really changed quite a bit. Back in the old days, particularly when I was younger, and probably up until right about the time that I turned 40, I was a neocon. And I felt that the military was a great way for us to impose our will around the world. And interestingly enough, after reflecting on how that was working out for all that time, I eventually came to the conclusion that maybe that type of policy wasn't working out so well.
Yeah, it's very perceptive of you, though.
Well, it can't be too perceptive if it took me so long to do it. And what I really looked at is, quite often that type of foreign policy is referred to as the sharp and pointy stick foreign policy. When you're working in like a corporate job, well, any type of job for that matter, if you have a boss that comes around and pokes people with a sharp and pointy stick just because he can, or, you know, because he or she lacks the communication skills to actually communicate what they're looking for and do it in a positive manner that promotes innovation and productivity and all this other stuff. And if they basically just come around and say, look, I'm the boss and that's why you're going to do this. Otherwise, if you don't like it, you can go work in Somalia. And
I said so, that's why. Kind of like that mentality.
Yeah. Oh, my mother was famous for that one. But I started thinking about it because I'd worked in management positions in different career fields, different industries, and going around and kicking people in the hindsight and poking them with the sharp stick just because I could didn't really yield very good results. And as I was looking at as I was exploring my philosophy of how I should conduct myself in life and how things should happen, I just kind of expanded it out to, maybe these other countries don't like having the U.S. come in and tell them how to do things. And you'll see this a lot out of the patriot types. They'll say, oh, we don't want the U.N. coming in here telling us what to do. We don't want these other countries telling us what to do. Yet, they still find it acceptable for the U.S. to export democracy, and as a matter of fact, carpet democratize them.
Well, yeah, cause so it's different when we do it, Lou.
We don't mouse pocket me, bro. But so really coming to that realization and expanding it out a little bit further, I realize, you know, in summary, I don't like being poked and told what to do, and, you know, in my professional life or my personal life, and I probably won't wake somebody off in some foreign land a few thousand miles away. I don't even want the people a couple miles away doing it.
Yeah.
So why not expand that philosophy to everything? Now, granted, most people will say, well, that's just utopian and idealistic. Really? It's utopian and idealistic that not starting trouble might result in not having trouble down the road?
Well, yes, Lou. You know, not everything could be, you know, unicorns and rainbows like you would like it, sir. on that line of thought, I mean, I actually heard this. It might have been on a Scott Horton podcast I was listening to that day. One of those I was listening to, and I was hearing somebody. Or actually, no, I think it was Dave Smith's show. But he was talking about, you know, how just this mentality of people is like, okay, you know, even if we agree that, you know, we agree with you that, okay, fine, maybe, you know, maybe we've caused some of these problems by constantly being, you know, trying to, you know, carpet democratize, like you said, that type of thing. Well, we still have the problem to deal with it now. So it's not like we could just leave it alone. It's like, well, no, yeah, you really could. You could stop peeving off the rest of the world on a constant basis.
Do you really think those terrorists are going to quit hating our freedom if we stop bombing them? Nah, they're going to keep hating us, and they're going to follow us here. And it's really interesting because if you look at
ISIS Air Force, man, look out.
Yeah, and their Navy too. Yeah, and they're gonna pull up into, like, I don't know, San Diego or New Orleans, and they're gonna get off of their amphibious assault vehicles. So, like, the ramp's gonna come down, like in Saving Private Ryan, and they're gonna go storming the beach and everything, and then they'll probably have some vehicles that can drive on land. And but anyway, but if you look back to the Soviet invasion and occupation of Afghanistan, when the Soviets left. The folks in Afghanistan didn't follow them back to Moscow and keep fighting with them.
Yeah.
For the most part, get
off our lawn, Ruskies. That's all they wanted, you know.
Yeah.
And they did.
Yeah. Get off our rubble and pebbles. But, yeah, and I'm pretty sure that for the most part, when occupying force leaves, whether it's under those circumstances or whether it's under victorious circumstances, because and the Soviets didn't exactly leave under the best of circumstances for them, but I mean, yeah, I don't think there's a big history of these different countries, these different groups following the occupiers back to their homelands and fighting with them more, and they want them out, you know.
Yeah. Exactly. That's kind of the, yeah. But, you know, we shouldn't let things like history and actual facts cloud our judgment here, Lou. You know, just
or logical thinking.
Yeah, exactly. Just let the neocons do their thing and let them, you know, convince everybody that it's just that you have to be in a constant state of war. You know, good old Ronnie and his peace through strength BS, that whole thing, you know.
Yeah, that I had a conversation with somebody earlier today, and we were talking about this different stuff, and he's a veteran like I am. He's done at least one tour over in Afghanistan, and so he was trying to argue some of these neocon talking points. I'm like, well, can you tell me when that worked? Well, no, not really, but, you know, that's the theory of how it works. I'm like, right. But and speaking of more illogical thought, yesterday was November Fool's Day in the area.
November Fool's Day, I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, did you have that over there in New York State of Stan?
I think so. I didn't go. I had a very light day yesterday, so I didn't have to leave the house for very long. And I don't own cable, you know, I don't have cable anymore. So I think it occurred. I didn't actually go out and see it myself, but I'm pretty sure it happened here.
Well, what's really interesting is there's a longtime incumbent that was running for city council in the city that I used to live in before I moved out here to the other part of Bear Saskatchewan. And his campaign slogan, or one of them, was "Take back your city, reelect," and then his name. I'm thinking to myself, who are you taking the city back from? Now, who are the voters taking it back from? If it's under occupation, you know, from the government, then an incumbent is probably the last person that they want to reelect. Well, you can't reelect a first-timer, but...
Yeah, I know what you meant, though.
if it's under occupation by somebody else, and you know, what the heck are the incumbents doing? There's no reason to reelect them because they didn't get rid of that enemy occupation. So either they were the enemy, but whether the election is one thing or another, one thing is certain. The incumbents are either the enemy occupation force or were completely powerless to prevent them.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I try not to anymore because it drives me insane. But every once in a while, I try to get back into a voter's head and be like, why? You see this, you see it fail over and over and over again. Why do you keep, you know, why would we keep trying this? And I can't wrap my head around it anymore. I don't know.
People, you know, just, what? I try to simulate the voter's head. So I'll go up into like an old musty attic with cobwebs all over the place.
Well, you know. We'll say that, which is funny, because you know, they you mentioned it before with the whole utopian idea that people, a lot of people think, you know, people like us hold because we want these silly things like, you know, a peaceful coexistence and not, you know, not condoning stealing and murdering and raping your neighbors and stuff like that. You know, we're crazy for wanting that, but they keep beating their head against the wall and doing this voting ritual despite it not working ever.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
but where are the really, utopians?
Yeah, well, it's amazing that it's considered utopian to believe that you can have peace when you don't start trouble.
I know,
when it's you crazy. when you don't intentionally start a war, you can have peace. Is that just off the wall or what?
Apparently, yeah, we're crazy for even mentioning it, I think.
Yeah, apparently so. Anyhow, we're not as crazy as USA Today in their video, but we'll talk about that more when we come back.
Oh, jeez. I know it's on my Christmas list this year. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Cell 411 is a free app for Android and iOS that replaces government-controlled 911. Cell 411 allows you to preset a group of friends or private organizations to show up in any emergency. Cell 411 is a nightmare for the state because it proves their so-called services aren't needed. Cell 411 has had thousands of installs, and of course it's covered by the BIPCOT no government license. Cell 411 because your friends won't shoot you when you're in trouble. Without the government, who would build the emergency services? You and Cell 411. Get it today at GetCell411.com. That's GetCell411.com.
While I clear my glasses here, give us a rundown on what happened with USA Today in their video. Did you see the whole video?
I caught most of it. I brought this up to you before we started the show because I had seen this. I see a bunch of people posting this today, and I didn't actually check the validity of it. And I, right before we started the show, I did. Apparently, the USA Today, you know, I'm guessing it may be on their website too, but at the very least on their Facebook page, had this video trying to describe the weapon that the guy in Texas used in the shoot, you know, in the church shooting. And it's this video that runs through like all these you know, additions they claim can be added to a standard AR-15, and among these things is what I mentioned right before we went to break, that I definitely want, you know, if I was going to make a Christmas list, I would want it on mine.
Let's bury the lead for a minute.
Okay.
So as you're talking about it, it's a little video, and it'll highlight a little portion of it, and it'll say, all right, this is a buttstock, this is a trigger guard, this is a magazine, and what's definitely implied by this, and you get this out of the gun grabby type folks, particularly the person who says, oh yeah, and it has a shoulder thing that goes up, which I'm not sure what that was referring to, but I always get a kick out of it.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite lines ever.
And strangely enough, the assault kitchen has a shoulder thing that goes up too. But anyway, it's talking about all these different things, and It's talking about a sling, the two-point sling. Now, a sling is essentially a strap. Well, it's not. It is a strap, and this way you can throw it over your shoulder. So you can carry it over your shoulder with the firearm behind you, just walking through the woods. Like if you're hunting and you're getting, you know, you're going to shoot eventually, but you don't want to go carrying it at the ready. So you got the strap that goes over the shoulder. There's a couple different ways that you can carry. You can also carry it in a tactical thing. But anyway, this sling, this piece of nylon, does absolutely nothing to make it fire faster or anything else. It's simply for carrying. And it talks about adding a flashlight and some other stuff. And then,
hey, man, you could blind somebody with that thing, Lou. That's
probably. Matter of fact, the flashlight is probably so bright that it will burn holes in people's clothing. You don't even have to shoot them.
Yes, yeah, I know, right? Jeez.
So, it's got all these different things like heat resistant hand guards or something like that, or heat reducing hand guards, and all that does is it keeps the barrel from getting too warm and everything else. So we're not talking about anything that makes it more lethal. As a matter of fact, I don't think there's anything on there that had anything to do with the lethality except for some of the higher capacity magazines. Oh, and incidentally, those 100 round drum magazines are, I don't want to say notorious for jamming, but it's probably more common than most people would like. So it's, you know, having this high capacity magazine doesn't automatically mean that you're going to be able to use it without fail.
Yeah.
So anyway, so all this different cosmetic stuff, and of course everybody freaks out because of the appearance of it. These racist gun grabbers, they hate black guns. That's what it is. It's because the gun is black.
It must be.
Yeah. So anyway, now that we've led people along and got them all hyped up, what was this item that just made your Christmas list?
Oh, the best attachment of all, the chainsaw bayonet, which apparently I was not aware of, and I must be slipping in my old age. I'm not paying enough attention because I didn't know I could get one of those on my AR-15. I would have had one yesterday. Oh, it's crazy. And like, this, you know, USA Today, I mean, it's been mocked on and off for as long as I can remember it being in existence, but it's still considered, you know, a somewhat reputable. It's not like the National Enquirer or anything. But like, they
it
just
is proud- now.
Well, yeah, but I mean, they just proudly put this out, and it's just so, so bad. So bad. Like, who does their research for this stuff? You know, one of the best things I saw was when I went to the actual Facebook page for it. I think the top comment that I saw on their original post of that video was mentioning, you know, a whole bunch of things that were wrong, and then at the very end it's like, oh, and that chainsaw bayonet, yeah, that's something you'd find on a Nerf gun. Like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah. I know a lot of people had put down comments on there that were, shall we call it, disparaging to USA Today?
Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
And I may or may not have been one of them. We'll be back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Are back. Freedom Fiends, man. Freedom Fiends. Ugh. I'm dying over here. I think I caught something from this video from USA Today. And the comments are quite epic. Everybody's pointing out the whole chainsaw bayonet thing. My comment may or may not have been, I hear it has a tactical nuke launcher right next to the chainsaw bayonet, you bunch of idiots. So, and it's really interesting. I don't know if it's a lack of knowledge. Well, I imagine it's a lack of knowledge, but it could also just be directly trying to deliberately mislead everybody. So I don't know. Or it could be both. I mean, it very well could be either one. It could be stupidity compounded with malice. Who knows? But anyway, it's really amazing how they tell these stories and they get stuff wrong. And I don't see why they're unable to admit when they're wrong, particularly when media outlets get this stuff wrong continuously. I don't know. It just seems that with all the backlash that they would probably I don't know, learn something.
Well, you know, that'd be asking too much, Lou.
Yeah. And of course, the internet responded in the way that the internet does. And there's just been a massive amount of meme fodder being carpet bombed on them. So they're getting hit pretty good.
Yeah. But they won't, you know, they won't back down from their position at all. You know, I think we actually were talking about this the other night. Just in general, how people are like that, like when all this stuff happens and they make these comments, like they don't really apologize that they were wrong, and they'll do their best to not even mention that they were wrong about anything. They'll just try to, you know, divert attention and then figure another way to plow ahead with the same agenda, because mm-hmm. Well, that's how they operate.
And here's what I found, I think you and I are pretty well in agreement on the mentality of the gun grabbers. I know a lot of people in our circle are in agreement with it. And here's what I get from them. They're not really concerned about stopping murders. They talk about For the Children, and Gloria Steinem says, if only, you know, if banning guns could save one child's life, it would be worth it, as she wears her I Got an Abortion t-shirt. So, yeah, hypocrite. They're not concerned about people being able to defend themselves. And by the way, I'm not some crazy evangelical pro-lifer person. I'm just calling out hypocrisy here.
Oh, yeah. Good clarification, but I knew that.
And to be honest, I really don't touch the abortion debate because, one, I don't really know exactly where I stand on it, because there's good arguments in both directions. But anyway, they're not concerned about people being able to defend themselves. As a matter of fact, the same people that say that the police are a racist institution, that it's systemic racism, believe that the racist institution should be the only ones with guns. These idiots say that Trump is literally Hitler, and Hitler must disarm the entire civilian population.
Yeah,
they will get a gold medal in the mental gymnastics to figure out a way to show statistics and everything else to mean that that guns are the cause, but it doesn't, because the statistics don't bear that out, and the logic doesn't bear it out either. I mean, there's so many different arguments to refute all the nonsense that comes out. But the thing is, they're not concerned about people being safe. They're not concerned about murders being stopped. They're not concerned about anything other than the complete disarmament of the civilian population. They're anti-gun. That's all they think about. So they're not even that though.
They're not anti-gun because they want specific people to have the guns. They just don't want you to have the guns or me to have the guns.
Well, like I said, they want disarmament of the civilian population. Yeah. And so you're not going to get an honest debate out of them. They're not willing to give and take. They're not willing to concede when they're wrong. So rather than just debate them and all their other nonsense, my answer is this: no, because F you, that's why.
Because I said so. That's why. You know.
You ready for the sharp stick?
Exactly. Yeah, right. Well, yeah, because they, you know, it's funny because for the most part, I don't see the statistics anymore from the if I do pay attention to the gun grabbers, all I ever see anymore, all they have left is the, you know, the appeals to emotion and the what about the children, and if anything, it's the comparison to, you know, the rest of the world. Well, you know, such and such country has gun control and they haven't had, you know, they don't have these, you know, these crazy attacks. I'm like, yeah, okay. What's the population?
Did they have these types of attacks before?
Yeah, exactly. Like all those things. But they don't want to.
Oh, Australia is a prime example.
Yeah.
And the philosopher had a little video out on there. and the violence that was committed with firearms was on a 3% decrease already before the gun ban of 1996 went into effect. Well, so yeah. by saying that that gun violence decreased even further, I believe there's also some statistics out there that would show that gun crime didn't really decrease a whole lot. I can't remember exactly what it was, but certainly other violence went up. Robberies went up because people didn't have a way to defend themselves. But anyway, if the gun violence actually did go down, then government was chasing a trend and taking credit for it because it was already happening before that.
Yes, government's always a lagging indicator. So yeah, that would
make
sense.
That should be a show title for last week.
Yes, what a great idea, Lou. But yeah, I had another point on that. Now I've already lost it, but whatever. But I agree with you. Yeah, no, that's what it was. The like I said, I don't hear them making the other arguments because I've actually not just like debating online, but you know, back in my days when I was still a good little libertarian, a voting libertarian, and I was a part of the Oath Keepers. I actually went to a couple of these actual like debates. Where they had like town hall meetings and like the city council or whatever was there, and as a part of the Oath Keepers, we, you know, that we would travel to these different meetings and be the representatives, basically doing the job that the NRA claims they're supposed to be doing out there, like defending the Second Amendment and stuff like that. Like the Oath Keepers were actually out there doing it, but you know, I actually got to see this firsthand, and you know, they tried to come up, like that was the last time, and that was years ago now at this point, that I heard them trying to run the statistics and stuff, and just like watching them get annihilated, like it was like it seemed to coincide with that. Like after that, all I ever heard anymore was like the emotional arguments, because they realized like anytime they try to trot out statistics, they just get annihilated, because it's not even just they can't even call bias anymore, because it's like the government's own statistics on all the stuff they talk about is all in favor of people who want to have guns.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna read a Facebook post. I'm sure you know this guy. His name is Bruce Driggers.
Yes, I know Bruce.
This is why gun control is BS. That's not what he wrote, but anyway. You can't fix the demand-side problem with a supply-side solution. America is not a violent nation because of an easy supply of guns. America has an easy supply of guns because it is a violent nation. Each side in the debate likes to cherry-pick data to support their preconceived conclusions and claim the problem is one of simple math. It's not. You can't apply simple diagnoses or remedies to complex sociological problems. And believe me, America's thirst for violence is not a case of simple math. In a nutshell, the gun control fallacy amounts to this. It assumes that controlling the supply of guns will complicate and mute people's demand for guns, thereby resulting in a drop in violence. But this isn't the case. People who commit acts of violence don't have a demand for guns. They have a demand for violence. And this is something that a lot of people overlook. And as long as individuals in any given society believe that violence is an acceptable or workable solution to their real or perceived grievances, they will continue to turn to that solution, and they will use any tools available, guns, knives, poison, fertilizer, whatever. Anyone who's had to endure training in sales techniques knows the difference between features and benefits, and they know that consumers purchase benefits, not features. Benefits are the things consumers are looking for, comfort, security, alleviation of pain, peace of mind, sexual gratification, etc. Features are the details, not the motivation. People choose violence because they perceive the results of violence as a benefit. Guns are merely features, one means to an end, nothing more. Gun control will not only do nothing to stem the demand for violence, it will most likely produce unintended consequences that are anathema to the people who propose it. Just as outlawing abortion resulted in coat hanger terminations and alcohol prohibition resulted in bathtub gin and cocaine prohibition resulted in crack. I shudder to think of the horrific ways in which people will alleviate their demand for violence in a world where guns are difficult to procure. Well, guns won't be difficult to procure. They'll be more difficult than they are now, but they won't be that difficult. It's like most of these drugs are 100% illegal, but they can be procured darn near anywhere. Even in maximum security prisons.
Sometimes that's one of the easiest places to get them.
Actually. Yeah. So does that mean I'm saying the causes of violence are prescription meds or video games? Not necessarily. As I said above, violence in America is a complex sociological problem requiring us all to address a complex set of sociological solutions, which means applying close scrutiny to our institutions from the top down. If America is truly a violent society, then we need to ask why our fellow countrymen seem to have a demand for violence, a propensity to choose violent or force-based solutions to their perceived problems. The answer most likely can be found in our institutions. Those organizations to which we delegate the education and propagation of our most deeply held convictions, that means schools, churches, business, and most especially, government. This means focusing on solutions that address the core problems, the ideology of violence. It's in schools that teach authoritarianism instead of critical thinking. It's in governments that choose military solutions to problems of diplomacy. It's in culture that promotes cheating and success over adding value and practicing thrift. It's in families that use corporal punishment instead of positive reinforcement. It's all around us, and that's where we should be focusing our efforts. And we'll focus those efforts when we get back from this trip to the market. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Biptunia. Music for the drive to Alpha Centauri. Biptunia's influences are Gary Numan, Brian Eno, Pink Floyd, David Bowie, Led Zeppelin, Grateful Dead, Frank Zappa, Robert Fripp, Blondie, Kraftwerk, and Dead Kennedys. Biptunia styles are trip-hop, rock, pop, glam, industrial, ambient, jazz, and space. Plus, it's got cats and is covered by the BIPCOT NoGov license. You can download Biptunia's music free. Go to biptunia.com. That's BIPTUNIA. Bravo, India, Papa, Tango, Uniform, November, India, Alpha. Biptunia.com.
Freedom Fiends, Blue and Jeremy tonight. So I just got done reading a post by a Facebook friend of ours, Bruce Driggers, and he's got some really good stuff, and plus he's also just pretty darn entertaining. So smart and entertaining. But anyway, it's really interesting the conclusion that he's brought up here, because I mean, ultimately it's both sides are wrong, because both sides are arguing that it's some form of evilness and everything else, and the ultimately what it comes down to is this demand for violence, and something that they hit on, let me find it again here, it says, this means focusing on solutions that address the core problem, the ideology of violence. It's in the schools that teach authoritarianism instead of critical thinking. It's in governments that choose military solutions to problems of diplomacy, and so on and so on. If you look at the groups that are considered heroes here in America, by and large, and definitely promoted in the government schools, it's the cops. The cops in the military. Yep. The cops are the ones that show up at a situation and commit acts of violence. And you can debate about whether they've always been violent thugs or if the violent thuggery has increased over the years. I personally think that it's increased over the years and gotten a little bit worse. And I also attribute that change to their change of uniforms. Back when I was a kid, patrol officers, you know, it was like Adam 12, they would wear dress uniforms and they would have ties. It might have been clip-on ties, but they still had ties. And now they're wearing their tactical, you know, Sergeant Rock stuff, and the more cops start to look like Darth Vader, the more they start to act like Darth Vader. But think about this. How many people, and this is primarily the conservatives, how many of these people will cheer the violence of cops going into a group of hippie leftist protesters and pepper spraying them or giving them wood shampoos with the nightsticks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
How often does this happen?
Pretty.
Or well, how often? Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, and whenever it does occur, sure. Yeah, it does happen.
Yeah. So how often do these same people assume that when there's an incident between a cop and a civilian that the cop was right, and had the civilian just been a little bit more obedient and looked a little bit more
boot? You would just follow the law, man.
Yeah. 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 If Rosa Parks had just followed the law and took her black butt to the back of the bus, she wouldn't have had no problems, right? That, yeah. Because that's the mentality that they have with it. And then take a look at the border issue. I can't count the number of times I've seen all these pro-life conservatives on Facebook talk about how A-10s should go strafing with machine gun fire along the border at anybody that goes across, or the minefields, the electric fence, regular or extra crispy. What's some of their other things? Oh yeah, they love the drone strikes.
Oh yeah, drone. Yeah, I was gonna say that because even my wayward co-host on the Seeds of Liberty, Dave, has made that statement multiple times, and I'm just like, hey, you really haven't thought this through, have you? Like, no. It's like, well, there'd be signs up. It doesn't know. You can't just blast people out of the sky with a Hellfire missile just because, you know, they cross some line that you don't want them, that you don't think they should cross, that other people don't have a problem with them crossing.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to touch that border terror argument because it's, yeah, a bunch of Jerry's kids. You know which Jerry I'm talking about, too. So, but the thing is, they're thinking that killing people, that murdering people for crossing some government line is a good thing. And gee, people wonder why you have mass shootings. People wonder why you have a much higher incidence of violence here than around the world. And then of course the military. And quite frankly, for the most part, I remember when Desert Storm came up, even the anti-war left had to get behind it because it was just so well spun and sold and manipulated. It almost ran like it was produced like in that movie Wag the Dog.
Yeah, right.
Wow. And nobody dared criticize it, and that was kind of a trial run to where when Desert Storm Part 2 popped up a few, a decade later, said, hey, let's run with it. And people supported it, and people were waving their flags really hard, and they were cheering, and they were thinking with their flags instead of their brains, and all of a sudden, hey, war is cool. So, I don't know. Maybe when the role models are violent thugs, you can't be surprised when people emulate them.
Yeah, maybe that's the one thing government isn't a lagging indicator.
Just a thought. We'll be back, second hour. The Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through Libertarian Reeducation Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite Lib Pair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. Now, I'm kind of excited. I think it was just in the past couple months that the first broadcasts arrived at Alpha Centauri.
Yeah, that was a few months back now at this point.
Yeah. What does it take, like 4.6 or 4.7 years to get there?
Something like that. 4.2, between 4.2 and 4.6, somewhere in there. 4.3, okay. 4.4, I don't remember exactly. Somewhere in there.
So I'm anxiously awaiting their response. And hopefully they're not going to say, could you repeat that?
I know,
that
man.
That would really waste an awful lot of time.
Yes, I've been waiting on that state blocking technology that we've been counting on them to bring.
Yeah. So anyway, this hour we're going to talk about, I had mentioned this last week because we had the article about why anti-authoritarianism is considered a mental illness, or why people who have anti-authoritarian tendencies are usually considered to be mentally ill. This one here comes from APA.org. That's the American Psychological Association. And it's APA Stress in America Survey, U.S. at lowest point we can remember. Future of nation, most commonly reported source of stress. So, from Washington, D.C., nearly two-thirds of Americans, 63%, say the future of the nation is a very or somewhat significant source of stress. Slightly more than perennial stressors like money, 62%, and work, 61%. According to the American Psychological Association's report, Stress in America, the State of Our Nation, more than half of Americans, 59%, said they consider this to be the lowest point in U.S. history that they can remember, a figure spanning every generation, including those who lived through World War II and Vietnam, the Cuban Missile Crisis, and the September 11th terrorist attacks. When asked to think about the nation this year, nearly 6 in 10 adults, 59%, report that the current social divisiveness causes them stress. A majority of adults from both political parties say the future of the nation is a source of stress, though the number is significantly higher for Democrats, 73%, than for Republicans, 56%, and Independents, 59%.
Shocker.
I think the breakdown on that is the Democrats are bummed out that Hillary's not implementing Trump's foreign policy, and the Republicans are happy that Trump is implementing Hillary's foreign policy.
If this survey was done a couple of years ago, I would be willing to bet some serious Bitcoin that that those numbers would be reversed. Because, you know, it's more stress on the party that thinks they're getting, you know, shafted even more because their guy didn't win, you know, mm-hmm. that type of thing. So,
yeah. And then you have the independents who don't care whether it's Trump or Hillary implementing the Trump or Hillary policy. They just want to get abused. So anyway, we're seeing significant stress transcending party lines, said Arthur C. Evans, Jr., PhD, APA's chief executive officer. The uncertainty and unpredictability tied to the future of our nation is affecting the health and well-being of many Americans in a way that feels unique to this period in recent history. The most common issues causing stress when thinking about the nation are healthcare, 43%, the economy, 35%, trust in government, 32%. If only 32% have a problem with trust in government, that's definitely underreported. Hate crimes, 31%, and crime, 31%. Wars, conflicts with the other countries, 30%, and terrorist attacks in the United States, 30%. About 1 in 5 Americans cited unemployment and low wages, 22%, and climate change and environmental issues, 21%, as issues causing them stress. Adults also indicated that they feel conflicted between their desire to stay informed about the news and their view of the media as a source of stress. While most adults, 95%, say they follow the news regularly, 56% say that doing so causes them stress, and 72% believe the media blows things out of proportion. With 24-hour news networks and conversations with friends, family, and other connections on social media, it's hard to avoid the constant stream of stress around issues of national concern, said Evans. These can range from mild thought-provoking discussions to outright intense bickering, and over the long-term conflict like this may have an impact on health. Understanding that we all still need to be informed about the news, it's time to make it a priority to be thoughtful about how often and what type of media we consume. The survey also found that 51% of Americans say that the state of the nation has inspired them to volunteer or support causes they value. That's nice. More than 59%.
Does that include people who have joined Antifa? I got off my couch and threw something.
I think these people actually want to do something. But anyway, more than half, 59%, have taken some form of action in the past year, including 28% who signed a petition. That's not action. And 15% who boycotted a company or product in response to its social or political views or actions. Most of the people that boycott weren't shopping there to begin with. So anyway, yes. Among general findings, as is the case every year, let me go back to this petition thing. One of my long-term in real life friends, somebody that I grew up with, had a post on Facebook and she was looking for a bunch of signatures to get something. I can't remember exactly what it was. And as soon as I saw, you know, help so-and-so get signatures, I'm like, whatever, next. I blocked that post mentally. I remember not too long ago, just a couple years ago, I think it was, there was a petition drive to get 20,000 signatures, I think it was, or 10,000 signatures to get the government to forgive the student loan debt of a kid that died and his mom got saddled with it.
Yeah.
So they see the petition as doing something. If they can get 10,000 people to sign a petition, to scribble their name on a piece of paper or a digital petition, if they can get 10,000 people to do that, this woman's debt will be, or her son's student, her deceased son's student debt will be forgiven, possibly. If those 10,000 people had each donated $2 each, and $2 isn't much. I mean, I don't think there's a whole lot of people out there that can't afford it. If you can afford internet access, you know, through your phone or whatever, I'm sure you could come up with $2 to make a donation. If 10,000 people had donated $2 instead of signing some stupid digital signature to pass that cost on to the tax cattle, which once all the shipping and handling charges go along with it, it'll cost a lot more than that. But had those people just donated $2 each, they could have covered that money.
True.
But they see begging for a longer leash, appealing to government as their solution. So anyway, going back, among general findings, as is the case every year since the survey began, women report significantly higher stress levels than men, 51 to 44 on a 10-point scale. Oh, I'm sorry, 5.1 versus 4.4 on a 10-point scale, where 1 is little or no stress and 10 is a great deal of stress. Black and Hispanic men also reported a significantly higher average stress level, 4.8, than white men, 4.2.
That's that white privilege right there.
Yep, definitely. This year's survey showed no significant differences in stress across the country's four regions, with the East reporting a stress level of 4.7, and the South, Midwest, and West all reporting stress levels of 4.8. The regions do differ, however, in their sentiments about the future of the nation. Adults in the West, 70%, were more likely than those in the South, 63%, East, 60%, and Midwest, 56%, to consider the future of the nation as a somewhat or very significant cause of stress. Well, or source of stress.
Well, yeah, because that's California probably made up most of that 70%.
Probably. So, jumping down to the methodology here, the 2017 Stress in America survey was conducted online with the United States by Harris Poll on behalf of the American Psychological Association between August 2nd and 31st, 2017, among 3,440 adults age 18 plus who reside in the U.S., including 1,376 men, 2,047 women, 1,088 white, 810 Hispanic, 808 black, 506 Asian, blah, 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 blah. Weighting variables include age, gender, more nonsense. So anyway, with it being a poll, it is a small segment of the society. And what's really interesting is why people are putting, how could I put it? They're worried that the nation's going to go away, and they're worried about our nation. And it's, I have a hard time understanding where they're coming from, even though I used to think this way back then. But it wasn't really that I thought that way. It's just these were words that were tumbling out of my mouth because other people were saying it. I didn't have a real strong belief in it, but I guess I had like a partial belief. But and there's a lot of people that are absolutely freaking out over this. And one of the things that I've done to alleviate this type of stress, because I used to get stressed out over politics and where our country is going to go and all sort of stuff. And then I realized that, well, quite frankly, what am I going to do to stop it from going down the tubes? Because it was going down the tubes long before I got here, and it's continued since I've been here. You know, I voted really hard a few times, but you know, what can the average person do to stop this? My answer is nothing. So yeah. There's absolutely no sense in worrying about it. And a lot of people have this go down with the ship mentality. But anyway, we'll talk about that more when we come back.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
And we are back with the Freedom Fiends. Freedom Fiends. Talking is so hard.
You know, right?
So, what jumped out at you on this article here?
Oh yeah, as you were reading through this, and you know when you got to the part of the other stressors people were listing according to the survey behind, like, you know, government being the high, you know, the stress about government being the highest, and then what was the other thing? The economy was up there too.
Well, I don't think that they realize that government is a cause of their stress. They're just worried that the government isn't governing
the nation. That's what I meant. Sorry, basically.
Yeah, they just want government to government differently.
Yeah, exactly. But when you got to the list of the other stressors, it was, you know, interesting that certain things, of course, you know, I thought it tied into what we were talking about in the first hour about how people's like indifference to certain things, because the fact that hate crimes, which to me is just, it's such a broad, you know, nebulous nonsense word, doesn't really mean anything, because people just like want to make everything a hate crime to make it worse than just the fact that it's actually a crime, if it actually is a crime in the first place. But like, you know, stuff like that, and like, you know, the fact that the trust in government was so low, like you said, like the 32% of people are actually, that actually affects them at all, it seems.
I think that 32% was, only 32% have a concern about government.
Yeah. So I'm saying that's really low, it seems. But then like the whole thing about war and stuff, you know, that gets ranked pretty low, you know, war and conflicts, only 30% of people, like, that actually stresses them out. Like they don't care, like, you know, like we mentioned the first hour, people just don't seem to care that, you know, other people around the world may be getting bombed or displaced or whatever. As long as it's not us, we don't really care about it. It's not high on the level, but like, you know, more personal issues. It just goes to show where people's priorities are and how they actually don't care what the government does in their name, no less. As long as it isn't affecting them directly, that just kind of
they either tolerate it, or if it's something that bothers them, they'll rationalize it by saying, "Well, there's nothing I can do about it."
Yeah. So, like I said, either way.
they'll say something like, "Well, this is a Republican, not a democracy. In a republic, the representative make the important decisions for the citizenry, and much like when adults make decisions for small children."
Yes. Well, I don't know. So, yeah, I mean, like you, like the other thing you said, though, is, you know, there's a very small sample size, you know, what is it, like 1/1000th of the actual somewhere around the estimated population of the country.
Something like that. I think that, and this is strictly anecdotal, but if you look at social media and comments on there, you'll find that this sentiment is echoed pretty well, though.
Yeah, I know.
And of course, the different beliefs are mostly partisan. You know, the Republicans believe that the Democrats are the cause of all the problems, and vice versa.
Yeah, of course.
But something that jumps out at me is going right back to the title where it says "U.S. at lowest point we can remember." For some reason, it just really strikes me that, I don't know, maybe things are always perceived to be bad at the time. When I was in the Army, my dad had told me, because I didn't like the unit that I was in Germany, says, yeah, there's only two good units to be in. And I'm like, yeah, what's that? He says, the one that you were at and the one that you're going to. The one that you were at before and the one that you're going to next. The unit that you're in always sucks. So I really think that this is the worst I've ever seen it mentality. It's something that never goes away. It's kind of like how as people grow up, they turn into their fathers, and it's like, my God, this generation these days, these darn kids getting on my lawn and a bunch of lazy bums and all this sort of stuff. And quite frankly, I don't, you know, like the millennial generation takes a lot of flack for being lazy, and largely they are, but they didn't invent laziness. You know, they didn't come up with it on their own. That they're not ambitious enough to come up with laziness on their own. They had to learn it somewhere.
Yeah, I definitely think people like, you know, myself from the video game generation, we had a lot more to do that. A lot more to do with that than anybody else.
All right, we'll be back.
Listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Freedom Fiends, and we are back. This is Lou, and I'm joined by Jeremy. And we're talking about a recent survey by the American Psychological Association, Stress in America. It's an annual survey, and the conclusion is that the U.S. is at the lowest point we can remember. And I think when we left, I was talking about how it's generally consensus that things are always at the lowest point, and everybody wants the good old days, you know, like the New Deal, where the government was destroying food and other items to keep the prices high.
Yes.
You know, the good old days. We never had it so good, is what some of them said. But anyway, When I look at the different things that they're talking about here, and one of the biggest things that they say is, they're concerned about the future of the nation. What exactly that means, I don't really know. But I know that there's a lot of people out there that get stressed out over political stuff. People are still freaking out over the kneeling during the Garmin theme song, right? The national anthem.
Well, yeah. As far as I don't watch the sports ball anymore. But as far as I know, it's still going on. I think I saw something after the last week, which is like week 8 or 9 already. There's still protests going on, so I'm sure people are still up in arms about it.
Are you boycotting sports ball?
I'm not boycotting. I just happen to stop watching. I guess I naturally boycotted it a couple of years ago.
I've never been really big for watching sports. I mean, there's just a lot of other things I would rather do. So I can't sit down in front of the TV and watch sports. I can't say I'm going to spend my Saturday or Sunday watching sports ball. It just doesn't work that way. Something will happen. I'll get up and walk around and go do something. So I'm just not any good at it. So
I could for years. I just, you know, ever since I became an anarchist, I became less and less interested, because I didn't have time, because then I did have all these other things I could be doing instead. So I decided to do those instead.
Yeah, even before I was an anarchist, I never really had that attraction to watching sports. And I don't mind going to a stadium and seeing a game.
Yeah, seeing it live.
Yes, it's not something that I would do on a regular basis. I'd go, I would be fine going to one or two games a year, you know, football or baseball if somebody invited me. I could really care less about basketball. And I played hockey growing up, so you figure that I would have affection for hockey, but yeah, I can't even watch that, you know, unless I'm at the stadium. And that I'd go to a little bit more often, but I don't know if I'd buy tickets for it. But anyway, what I look at in regards to the whole kneeling before, you know, kneeling versus standing up for the government theme song is, if you're somebody that's really bothered by this, and there are people out there that they get really bothered, they see this disrespect to the flag in the same way that a radical Muslim sees drawing a picture, a cartoon of the Prophet Muhammad, and they just, you know, they start declaring fatwa, say, if you can't stand for my flag, you need to get beheaded. But anyway, the question that I would ask, and I pose this to a guy that I know recently. Can you tell me how exactly you were harmed by the sports ball player not standing up for the song? Can you show demonstrable harm? Can you show me where you lost money? Can you show me where you suffered physical pain? Where you caught a disease from it? Something. Can you show me something other than being offended like a snowflake?
Show me on the dollar where it hurt you.
Yeah. Show us on the dollar where the overpaid athlete hurt you. And they can't. And rather than admitting that they can't show how they suffered any harm, they'll go off with the, well, it sounds like you hate America too. You know, why don't you go be one of those millionaire athletes? Oh, okay, I will.
And, thanks for your permission. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I wish I could.
What's been holding you back this entire time.
Yeah, that and not being athletic.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, yeah, when I pose this question to people, you'd be surprised how often the reaction is lashing out. And it's no different than, I don't know if this was a real thing or if it was just something that was made up, but supposedly to protest Trump's election, a bunch of liberals were going to go scream at the sky.
I saw that article. I thought that was satire, but you can never tell. Yeah, there was a...
Well, it's kind of like the Antifa revolution that was supposed to happen last week.
Yeah, but, you know, if you follow some of those wonderful Antifa Facebook pages, like Antifa Boston, I think it is, there's a syphilis outbreak, so, you know, it's understandable.
Well, it's not like any of them had to take the day off work. But anyway, so... Every once in a while, I'll get somebody that will be like, you know what, you're right. And this isn't just about patriotic stuff. This is, if you're somebody that deals with anxiety or if you're somebody that deals with anger management issues, it's really a good way of examining yourself and the way that you think and figuring out, is this something that's worthy of me getting my blood pressure up over? Is this something that's worthy of me taking time off my life because of the stress that it induces and the harmful effects that it can have on my body? And not to mention just being a miserable bugger over it. Is it really worth it? So when the athlete doesn't stand for the national anthem, when the athlete kneels instead of stands and doesn't put his hand over his heart, how exactly were you harmed and why should you suffer for it?
Because people are crazy. Well, no, people just, well, I know why, because people conflate too many things and they just take it personally. And that's, the one thing you said though, like, you know, you made the kind of offhand comment about, like, you know, this, how a Muslim would react to a picture of Muhammad, but it's really true. Because that's, you know, people, I mean, I've watched people, I've been one of those people, who received death threats, for challenging any of these sacred cows that people, you know, completely ignoring what the protest itself was about, you know, because when the protest in the NFL started, it all started with one guy, Colin Kaepernick, who used to play for the 49ers. And he was very explicit about why he was doing it. You know, when they asked him, he explained exactly what his reasonings were, and people completely ignored that and just said, "Oh, you're insulting the troops. You're insulting the people who died." It's like, no, the flag doesn't mean that.
wasn't his reason because of police brutality?
Yeah, police brutality, and just the fact that the large amount of the disparity of the prison population with black to white type of thing. Black people being disproportionately represented.
Now, he wasn't advocating that more whites be incarcerated to make the numbers even, was he?
No. He just wanted less people to make sure. Yeah, Although he is a confused guy, because then he was doing all that and then rocking the Che Guevara shirt too, unfortunately. Yeah. But he was very open about this, but people instead wanted to talk about it. It had to be, you're insulting the military, you're doing this. Like I said, I dealt with that in my situation, because you say one thing, that means you're insulting this whole group of people, or this whole group of people, or whatever, or this whole idea. It's like, no, that's not how this works.
Yeah. Somebody asked me what I thought the punishment should be for some hippie that burns the flag. Now, as a longtime listeners already know, this is somebody who may have just tuned in the past half hour or so. I'm not really one of these people who gets all warm and fuzzy and frothy over the government's flag or is any of the rituals. So I says, I really don't care. Here's a thought for you. What should the punishment be for a U.S. military member that desecrates the Quran over in the Middle East? They're like, oh my God. I'm like, because it's the same thing. You're talking about destroying a sacred religious icon, and they're like, it's not an icon. I'm like, no, you view the flag as a religious idol.
If you think there should be any punishment for it whatsoever, then yes, you absolutely do look at it as a religious icon.
And the whole, people use the word desecrate, and desecrate means to destroy a religious artifact.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
I love pointing that out to people.
Yeah. So when people talk about that they should say the pledge and they should stand for the national anthem and salute the flag, I'm like, well, that's fine, but knock yourself out. I just don't engage in idolatry. And they're like, well, it's not idolatry. The flag's not an idol. It's a symbol, and we don't worship it. We love it. We respect it. We revere it. And if you don't like it, we'll chop your head off.
Yeah, exactly.
So, it's...
Well, yeah, and like I said, that's why there really is no difference, because I've watched the threats of physical violence over this stuff, and
I've had it too, not to the extent that you've had, but trust me, there's been some pretty colorful messages that I've received, and nothing to the extent that you've had, but
I wasn't even talking about just me though. I'm talking about anybody who's done anything. Like I know a bunch of other people who have done like flag videos or anything like that, or even talking about certain ideas, and then you just watch the feeds on there, on the whatever the post is, and I've seen it happen so many times, and just like people just right away, again, harking back to what we were talking about in the first hour about just that need for violence that people have, mm-hmm. That it's not the guns, it's just the inherent like desire for violence, apparently, that is really seems to be ingrained in the current culture. Again, which is the one thing apparently government did really well. it fostered that whole idea.
Yeah, with all the nationalism and pledging of allegiance and government theme songs and all that sort of stuff, you can't say that there's not prayer in school anymore. it exists. It's there. The indoctrination gulags are going full speed ahead.
Yeah, they are.
We'll be back.
Keep the kids out of those places, yo. Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
third act. So I want to end on something a little bit more positive than what we've been talking about for the rest of the show. This comes to us from our good buddy Paul Gordon over at iState.tv. Private insurance companies could replace government first responders. Oh, no!
Speaking of sacred cows.
Yeah. They do make the best hamburgers. The recent California fires generated responses by private insurance companies trying to get ahead of the fires before they did damage to homes the companies were insuring. The insurance companies sent in private fire departments to save the homes. Oh no, that's a job that only the government could do. Two articles recently highlight this potential. One article by the Daily Bell that deals philosophically about this emerging reality, a reality that could be extended far beyond what is currently, and the other articles from the Wall Street Journal that details examples of insurance companies using private firefighters to protect properties they insure. From the Daily Bell. You pay property taxes, and these go to support indoctrination centers known as public schools. I can't believe the Daily Bell wrote that. Maybe I
Joe Jarvis is the author. I know that name. I'm pretty sure he's been around for a long time. I can't remember. There was some website he created years ago. I can't remember which one it is. But anyway, he is very libertarian leaning. Always has been. So.
Well, anyway, they pay for local roads, local traffic enforcers, and firefighters. But these services are collectivized. The firefighters aren't really there to save your home. They're there to keep the whole town from burning down. Yeah, the joke is that the fire department will get there in time to save the chimney. Because the chimneys are made of brick. Firefighters are, and it's amazing up here in Bear Saskatchewan. You can drive down a road and you'll see the old shell of a building, and the only thing that's really still standing is the chimney. By the way, firefighters are some of the most dedicated public employees. The ones I have met often go into the profession for the right reasons and take seriously their commitment to saving lives. Many are even volunteers. I think 75% of the fire departments across the U.S. are volunteer fire departments. But still, they can only show up after they have been called. Many bravely rescue people from serious situations, but rarely is a structure saved. That is where private insurance comes in. You purchase private home insurance so that in the event that your home burns down, you don't lose all the money that has gone into it. But some companies go above and beyond when you purchase insurance from them. Increasingly, insurance carriers are finding wildfires, such as those in California, are an opportunity to provide protection against or beyond what most people get through publicly funded firefighting. Some insurers say they typically get new customers when homeowners see the special treatment received by neighbors during big fires. The enrollment has taken off dramatically over the years as people have seen us save homes, Paul Crump, a senior executive at Chubb, said of the insurer's wildfire defense services. It's absolutely growing leaps and bounds. Chubb provides extra protection to the homes they insure in certain zip codes that are prone to wildfires. They get private firefighters on the scene before the building catches. This means instead of being left with a pile of ashes and a check to go out, go about the arduous process of rebuilding your life, you are simply left with your home intact. Oh, wow, that's not too bad. Obviously, this makes sense from the insurance company's perspective as well. They're spending a little more on firefighters so that they don't have to spend a lot of money replacing homes. So the greedy capitalists, in order to keep from having to do the massive payout on a home, are spending a little bit of money for private firefighters to prevent homes from catching fire. Wow, that's really a novel idea. And the government fire departments, they don't do this. I mean, when there's a fire in the neighborhood, they'll go out there and they'll try and keep the rest of the neighborhood from burning down, but they're not preemptively working against this. So this here is just an efficiency that you get out of the private market that you don't get out of government. And from the Wall Street Journal, during the worst of last month's wildfires in Northern California, Dick Fredericks got a phone call that passed on some magical words. His house was safe. And go to iState.tv and read more about this. Check out Paul Gordon. He's a great guy. So, everybody, thanks for listening tonight. And Jeremy, thanks for coming on. And for more Freedom Fiends, go to freedomfiends.com.
Worms.
Worms indeed.